Parshas Vayishlach. Yaakov Avinu is having the fight with the Malach of Esav. He went back for the Pachim Katanim. And as they're finishing their fight, and Yaakov Avinu emerges victorious, the Pasuk says, Vayomer lo yashlecha, I'm not letting you go. He was holding on to the Malach of Esav. He said, I'm not letting you go until you give me a brach. So Eish Kodesh asks as follows, Navinna, lama here tzar Yaakov Avinu, shesar shal Esav, yivarchu, alaik var baruch Hashem. So why does Yaakov demand that the Tsar of Esav, that the Malach of Esav, should give him a bracha? Kadosh Baruch Hu already blessed him. So why does he demand this extra bracha of the Malach of Esav? Masha'alo ha-Malach ma-Shimcha. Hem lo yoda eshmo. What is the Malach asking Yaakov Avinu, what's your name? He knows his name. He came to fight Yaakov Avinu. He knows his name. So what's the question over there? So now, what happened? There's a fight between the Malach of Esav and Yaakov, and he already hit him in the Giran Nosha, and now the Malach wants to leave. Amar Yaakov, Heim Kazos Yar Labanai. Yaakov Avinu is asking a painful question. Is this the way it's always going to be? Will it be that after we were soivel, all of the tsar, all of the pain, all of the pegoim, this is our Yeshua? This is our Yeshua, just that our enemies were unable to destroy us? Is that it? It's a question that the Eish Kodesh brings up in the Sefer. Like, is this all there is? Like, after we've been through, and Yesh Kodesh didn't make it to the end of the war, but he's projecting forward. Will it just be that we escape with our lives? That we can check off that we still exist? They say a maisa that it was the Kleisenberger Rebbe. That the Kleisenberger Rebbe asked in the DP camps, he was walking around going, is this it? Like, no Mashiach? Like, is this it? Like, he couldn't believe that after all of the pain that they had been through, that there was no culmination of something unbelievable that would happen immediately, that they thought that they were going to ride off into the sunset. Like, with all the pain that we just caused, it can't be that the end of that story is just seder. So they didn't die. Again, nachmal, they didn't die. The pain of Yaakov Avinu's question, the way that the Eish Kodesh understood it, is this the way it'll always be? That you'll fight and you'll hurt me? And Dafka, again, Eish Kodesh doesn't say this, but it's said in many places that Dafka, he hit him in the Giran Nosha, because the Giran Nosha is the Makam Haleida. Meaning, so Yaakov Avinu understood that whatever happened in this fight is going to happen over and over and over again. And you want to leave. The Hainu, I emerged victorious in the sense that you hurt me, but I didn't die. So is that it? Is that all there is? Is this going to be the way it is forever and ever? Is this it? So I'm just going to return to the state that I was before we had this fight, before I had to be soivel all of this pain? Like, can't be. Yaakov Avinu refuses to allow this to happen to all of his children. These words, Lokain, are very powerful words. I said them in the wrong way. I can't imagine the way the Eish Kodesh said them. I imagine the Eish Kodesh screamed them from his heart. Like, that can't possibly be that Yaakov Avinu would allow. He can't allow that this is going to be the way it is throughout history. That there's nothing that's gained from every hell that we've been through. It can't be. Rakle Eshelcha Kim Berachtani. No, it's Dafka you. You need to bless me. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu's bracha is one thing. But it needs to be that there's a bracha that comes from the Malach of Esav. More than just we survived in this moment. There needs to be something that comes from this struggle, that the struggle itself becomes a bracha. There needs to be a Yeshua. This is a big word now, right? Because up until now, what would we have thought? We say, Anna Hashem Hashiana. What does it mean, Yeshua? Yeshua means, I'm in a tough situation. Yeshua means, Rabbeinu Shalom, we have no money, my husband lost his job, send us a Yeshua that my husband should have a job. That's not a Yeshua. That's not Yeshua. Yeshua is not just go back to the place that we were beforehand. Beforehand, we were barely making it. Now we're not making it all. Bring me back to a place of I'm barely making it. No, that's not a Yeshua. A Yeshua is that the situation that we were in beforehand, the precariousness of that situation, it should no longer be. Meaning, I'm living in a totally different existence. Having come through the milchama that I just went through, there has to be something magnificent at the end. Could you imagine if the Eish Kodesh would have known what was going to be just a couple years, the beginning of this whole process? I mean, it was like, it's like prophetic words, what he was saying, no? Because we know, I don't like, the return to Eretz Yisrael, just to be clear, I don't love the notion that like we have Eretz Yisrael so that like the world won't commit another genocide. That's not, I'm not putting those two things together. But what I would say is it's certainly true historically that the death of one created the birth of another. That's certainly true. Our ancestral rights to Eretz Yisrael certainly precede the Holocaust. And the argument to the world should not be, it's like the first Rashi in Chumash. It's like, why do you get Eretz Yisrael? Well, we had a Holocaust. But like, no, we have Eretz Yisrael because the Rebbeinu Shalom gave us Eretz Yisrael. And this is the organic, natural state of a Jew. But it's certainly true that it was born out of the death of the Holocaust. And that's what a Yeshua means. A Yeshua means that you go through something like this, and the salvation at the end is something that's mind-boggling. It's not just a return to what was. It's something that's extraordinarily different. We daven sometimes in a very small-minded way, no? Very narrow-minded. Like if... well, your children are probably young, but when you get a little older, like, please let this kid stop making me crazy. It's like a very small way of davening. Davening for Yeshua Hashem. Yeshua Hashem means, Rebbeinu Shalom, this could be amazing. This could be something, like, born out of this destruction could be something incredible. We have to train ourselves that when we're going through something like this, then when we're in the state of battling with the Malach of Esav in our own lives, that the tefillah should be a tefillah of Yeshua, and not just a tefillah that there should be a patur, that there should be like a relief from the pain that I'm caused. I think that's the key, right? That's the key word. Are we searching for relief, or are we searching for something growth-oriented? Are we searching that this should become something that leads to something fundamentally different? We know that the Malach of Esav is the Malach of Sama'a. It's brought down in many places. The Shulchan Aruch Kodesh brings it down. We know the Pasuk says, Ubala Hamavis Lanetzach, he quotes it in a moment, that the Pasuk in Yeshaya says that in La'asid level there's no such thing as death. Death is a cosmic accident. Death is a result of the chait of Adam Arishon. And in a world that Adam Arishon is rectified, there's no need for death. The Ramchal and Derech Hashem, where he describes it, it's like a fade to white. You know, like in the movies, it's like a fade to black. It's like a fade to white. It's the transparency of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Olam Haba becomes so transparent that there's this paradoxical reality where Olam HaZeh exists, lechalutin, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence is so clear that the harmony, the synthesis of the physical and the spiritual is so deep there's no such thing as death. Which, if you think about it, makes sense, because all of death happens from a lack of synthesis. Right? All death is what occurs when the system breaks down. Because ultimately, the system has parts. Right? So, mashallah, our heart pumps blood to the rest of our body, and if one part of that system breaks down, that's what we call a heart attack. But that's only because we're living in a world of parts. But what would happen if we were living with simple unity? Where HaKadosh Baruch Hu's oneness was so pervasive in the world that there was no such thing as parts anymore. And that the body draws its vitality from the soul, does so in a fashion that's totally organic. So there's no such thing as the breakdown of the system. So then the body would become so suffused with the godliness of the soul that death would not be a possibility. It wouldn't be shaya. It wouldn't even make sense. So then what happens to the Malach Samael? So the mem from the Malach Samael is removed. The mem and now the Malach's name is Sa'el. That's what happens. Why is the mem dafka moved? So the Eish Kodesh says, Shehu bechinas maves. Mem is the alludes here to the idea of death. So when the pasuk says ubala hamaves lanetzach, what that means is the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu removes death in the spiritual world is he kills the malach samael. So that's also not for now, it's too big an asik, but that's also a big idea of like what exactly is a malach and what is the role of the malach samael, because of course the malach samael is also a malach of Hashem. But the mem from the malach samael means that the tachlis of this malach is to bring death into the world. So to kill death in the world, because there's a spiritual system, and from that spiritual system all physical things occur. So the death of the Malach Samael is what allows life to be eternal in this world. It's clear, just to make sure everyone understands, it's this world, meaning it's a physical world. It's a physical world. It's a physical world that paradoxically is suffused with godliness. The way that, and this is what the Shlach explains, the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu kills the Malach Samael is by changing his name. That's why Yaakov Avinu asks the Malach, as we'll see in a moment, what's your name? Because he wanted to know, was I successful in bringing about a state of Olam Haba in which there's no more death? And so that, and that whole back and forth between Yaakov Avinu and the Malach of Esav. And Bechlau, that's a funny, like, why did it happen here by Pacham Ketanim? Why does it happen as a prelude to the story of Yaakov and Esav? These are very deep in Yonim, but at least for right now, to simply say that what Yaakov Avinu was attempting to do was to bring about the eternity of Klal Yisrael at that stage in creation. How is he doing that? He was hoping that he got it to a stage where the malach that he was fighting with had his name changed and the mem was removed. Meaning, the gematria of Sa'el is 91. And when you combine the gematria of the Shem Admos and the Shem Havaya, it's 91. Which means that the malach Sama'el has now revealed his truest purpose, which was that the malach should always be defeated. Like the Zohar HaKadosh says, again, Eish Kodesh doesn't say this, but I believe this is what the Eish Kodesh means, that there was once a king, the Zohar HaKadosh says there was once a king, and the king wanted his son, the prince, to become king. So he tested him by hiring a zayna to accost the prince when he was outside of the palace, and that the prince should learn to withstand this test would be a way that he would grow to be able to become a king. So the Zohar HaKadosh says when the prince passes the test, the king makes a banquet, and seated at the dais of the banquet is the king, the prince, and the Zayna. Because although the Zayna, she wanted, of course, she had to do her best because she was hired by the king in order to seduce the prince. So the catch-22 of the Zayna in this case is that she does everything she can to entice the prince, but really, in the deepest recesses of her heart, of course, she wants the prince to be successful. So at the dais of the banquet, the celebration of the Zayna in her quote-unquote failure, right, is actually her success. And this is really the Malach Samael. The Malach Samael is the Yetzirah. This is it's all the same person. The Malach Samael doesn't want to be the Malach Samael. That's the chiddush of all these things, is that buried within the struggle itself, buried within the fight for life, the fight for growth, buried within that itself is the desire to be overcome. And that's no small matter, because despite the fact that the Malach Samael will do everything it can to entice us in life, if we know that we're fighting an enemy that wants to lose, that already gives us psychologically a leg up. Because, I don't know how to say this, I'll say it like this, it's not the nicest way of saying this, but it's an honest way of saying this. You know, sometimes you like start a fight with your husband, but you see you're not going to win it because the level of determination is very high. So you go, this is not the fight to win. You know what I'm saying? It's not a nice way of saying it, but it's a true way of saying it. Sometimes we come up against another person, we're like, nope, wrong time, wrong place. I'll win a different one. Right? You go, okay, say that, it's fine. And sometimes you see that the resolve of the person is not 100%. When the resolve of a person is not 100%, so that's when you have the capacity to win. You can't beat a person who has 100% resolve. That's why we can't fight our children in the supermarket when they want a cookie. Because the resolve is 100%. There's no such thing as beating a child. Children have 100% resolve. And that's why we wear them down, that by the time they get to be 7 and 8 years old, we teach them we're stronger, and our resolve is stronger. Until they become teenagers and they realize, no, it's not. Our resolve is stronger. And then we marry them off happily, right? But this is the Bez Hashem. But this is the knowing that the Malach Samael wants to be killed. That the Malach Samael, in his heart, meaning in his essence, is really Havaya and Adnos. It's called Kulo HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the fact that it's Havaya and Adnos together tells you about the elevated nature of the Malach Samael. That really, really, this entire thing is one godly plan to build Hashem Diri Petachtoinim. Because if there was no struggle, and if there was no death, and if there was no push to become the person that you have inside of you, if that doesn't exist, so then where would we bring Hashem into? In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants a physical world. It must be. How do we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants a physical world? Because we're here. And it's not like Islam, where we say, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to just like transcend the physical world, and then we'll have everything we get up in Shemayim. No, Olam Haba is down in this world. Olam Hazeh is the world as it is. Olam Haba is the world as it will one day be. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates a system where the physicality of the world dominates over the spirituality of the world, where the Malach Samael is so powerful so that we can struggle with the Malach Samael to reveal the godliness within this physical world. That's the whole Yesod. But of course, the physicality, the Malach Samael of the world wants to be overcome. It wants to be imbued with godliness. It wants to have its essence revealed. That's why they say in Maisa that Rav Aryeh Levin was walking once with a Talmud, and the Talmud absentmindedly, like, you know, like, I don't know if you did this when you were kids, but you know, like, sometimes it's like a branch sticking out, and so you just put your, like, fingers on the branch, and you, like, take off, like, all the leaves, you know, like, you can, like, take off all the leaves. So, he did that, and Rabbi Levine looked at him, and he goes, what'd you just do? And he's like, what do you mean? I just, like, picked some leaves. He's like, there was a malach over every one of those leaves that was telling it to grow. Why? Mechit Tesei, you have the right to destroy that malach. And that's it's an extremely sensitive way of seeing the world. They have the beautiful picture. Maybe you'll get this picture. It's an amazing picture. There's a picture of Rav Elie Lapian, who was the great Mashkiach. Rav Elie Lapian is a picture of him feeding the cats. Because in the beginning of the State of Israel, you know why we have cats in this country. Because the natural solution to the mice that were in this country was to bring in the cats. So Rav Elie Lapian was very upset that the government, after they brought in the cats, and the cats killed all the mice. So he said, but who's feeding the cats? It's like we brought them in. We have to take achrayas for these cats. That's a sensitive thing. So there's pictures that in the yeshiva where Rav Elie Lapian was mashgiach, he would put out saucers of milk for the cats. And like, I'm not on that level. So when I hear the cats in the garbage meowing like children in Eretz Yisrael, I'm always like, okay, whose kid needs to be rescued from the garbage? You know, it's not. I don't think to bring them milk. I'm sure Rav Elie would have brought them milk, but I'm not on that level. But there's a sensitivity to the godliness of all things. Meaning the way that the tzaddikim see the world is not that physicality is something to be overcome or subdued, but it's that it has within it a godliness that needs to be accessed, which is of course the real reason why this whole story happened with Pachim Ketan. Because Yaakov Avinu is going back for these small jugs. Rav Matzio Solomon said, Mashkiach of Lakewood, the way he said it is, he said, Mashal Lamaha Davar Daima, that there was once a very poor man that had nothing. He was living on a park bench. And he went to sleep. And before he goes to sleep, as he's saying Shema, he davens to Rabbeinu Shalom. He says, Rabbeinu Shalom, I don't even care that I'm on a park bench, but I don't even have a Nagel Vassar that when I wake up in the morning, I can wash Nagel Vassar in the morning. Please at least give me a Nagel Vassar. And when the homeless man wakes up the next day, what's next to him is a Nagel Vassar full of water. And he excited like a nes minashamayim, and he washes Nagel Vassar with such a slavos that it creates such a rash in shamayim that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says we have to give this guy everything, and in a short amount of time he becomes an mamish and asher. First he buys a small house, then he buys a bigger house. Finally he's moving into a mansion. So did everyone? Did you make aliyah from America? Did you all make aliyah from America? Did you didn't make aliyah? You were here. South Africa. Okay, that's also good, right? So you probably had people packed for you in South Africa. From what I understand, there's a whole Chevra Kaddish over there that does all the work for you. What in the world did you come to this country for? I can't understand it. We have to hire our Filipinos. They cost us money. You know, it's like my wife has a South African Chevrusa. She's like, this woman has like help coming out the wazoo. Anyway, So when they're packing, you hire people to pack for you. I packed myself a fryer. I wanted to save a couple bucks. But, you know, like, today we hire people to pack for us. No, they come. It's amazing. These people, they pack, they pack like 2 hours, your whole house is done. What would take us 5 days to do, they do in mamash 2 hours. They come, because they have the boxes, they know how to do it, you know, and they come with that special tape, and they wrap everything up. It's a gevalt to see. So, imagine that they get to the mansion, and they see this wealthy man, the movers, they see this wealthy man, and he's tearing open the boxes, and he's going, Meshuggah, and he's like, I can't find it. And the movers say to him, what can't you find? He said, I can't find my plastic megalvas. And they're looking at him like, he's a Meshuggah. Like, what do you mean you can't find your plastic megalvas? Like, you're a billionaire. You could buy 1,000 plastic megalvasers, and it'd be nothing to you. He said, no, we got to go back. They drive back. They tear apart the old house. Finally, they find the megalvas. And they don't understand, because for him, that Nagelvasser is everything. For him, that Nagelvasser was a gift from Shemayim. Says Rav Matzio Solomon, that's what it was for Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu, it was the Bechina of, you're going back for a small Nagelvasser. Is the small Nagelvasser that you're going back for you, or for the Rabbanu Shalom? That was the fight between Yaakov Avinu and the Malach of Esav. Yaakov Avinu, of course, is the Bechina of Yud Ekev. Ekev from Lashon of the physical, Yud from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yaakov Avinu's job was to draw down all the godliness into the physical world. That's why he grabbed the heel of Esav. Okay, we're getting a little bit far afield. This is the depth of that story. It's not necessarily what the Eish Kodesh says, so we'll go back. The Malach Kadosh Ben Sari Malach. So what happens after the Malach Samal is killed? It's a tremendously holy Malach, like with all the other unbelievable Malachim. Lachein Acher She Yaakov Avinu Nesavik Imo. So after Yaakov Avinu struggles with the Malach, V'tiken Eschalto, Basar V'chino L'geula Asido, and now that Yaakov Avinu rectified his chelek of the Malach of Esav, and he's prepared the way for the ultimate geula, Kfar Neskadesh HaMalach. So now the Malach Samal, in Yaakov Avinu's mind, is now the Malach Sael. U'bikesh Kfar Toivas Yisrael. At this point, now the Malach only has a desire for revealed good. And it's up until now, the Malach of Esav also wants what's good for Klal Yisrael, but it's not in a revealed way. And now that the Malach Samal has been killed, and now it's Sael, the Mem has been removed, so now it's just pure revealed good, you know, godliness. It's all good. So Amar Loi, so now the Malach asks Yaakov, Mashim, what's your name? Vayomer Yaakov. And he responds, my name is Yaakov. So Heishiv lo HaMalach, Hine Hashem Yaakov, the Malach is saying to Yaakov, not tell me your name because I don't know it. The Malach is telling Yaakov, there's been a fundamental shift. In the struggle that we had, something changed. Your name was Yaakov because you grabbed onto the heel of Esav, which meant that every victory that you had over Esav only comes after you've already been trampled by the heel of Esav. So the fights that you've had up until now is you have to lose, and you have to lose, and you have to lose, and then you emerge victorious. V'nispater meikvayim, shayadosho, so now you're pater, you're removed. You're removed from this notion of being trampled on by Esav. V'al zeh ata mispalel gam lahalo sh'acher atzara tava Yeshua. So you're davening. This is what he's saying. You're coming to me and you're saying, no, I demand the Yeshua. It can't just be that we leave this situation and then we're right back in the same place that we were. It's just now I'm not being killed anymore. That's not enough. So Yaakov's demanding something more. The Malach is saying to him, no. You're not in that place anymore. The place that you were where you get trampled and now you're victorious, but you're saying, where's the Yeshua? Where's the growth that comes from us? Where's the unbelievable salvation? You're not in that place anymore. You see, that's not where we're holding anymore. Now, you're no longer in a state where your victory comes from the destruction, and now memela comes the growth. The name Yisrael indicates something greater than that. It indicates that from the very beginning, you were already victorious. That your power is absolute. This is what it will be, la'asad lavam. That's what the Malach is saying to Yaakov. He's saying, you're still Yaakov. We know his name was still Yaakov, but there's a dimension now that changed. That you don't have to go through, you know, my wife said it very well. It doesn't have to be this hard. You ever think about it like it doesn't have, like sometimes in life where we're like, it's just so hard and I almost feel like I'm being trampled and I get up and I'm being trampled and I get up and I'm being trampled. But and ultimately I'm victorious and I'm alive and I'm moving and I'm doing. But that's a Yaakov Avinu Mahalach. It's very, very hard. There's another dimension in our lives called Yisrael where it doesn't have to be this hard, where we could just be victorious, that we don't have a victim mentality that we have to arise from, that we're able just from the very beginning to say, I've got this, it's okay. Like I'm winning. Not winning from a position of losing. I'm winning in life. And that's the Bechina of Yisrael. And that's what he's saying. That's what the Malach is saying to him. You shouldn't identify as a Yaakov anymore. You shouldn't look, when you look at the nations of the world, don't look at the nations of the world as like coming for you and they're going to trample you, but don't worry, eventually you'll survive. It's bigger than that. You're going to be in a place where they're not coming for you. I can't imagine what it was like for the Esh Kodesh to say these words to those Yidden in the Warsaw Ghetto, where they were being trampled. The reality is that they were being trampled. So he was telling them, and this is like, again, just, it's astounding, the shmuzen are astounding. The sensitivity that the Esh Kodesh had, he wasn't denying their pain, he wasn't saying you're not being trampled. He was saying there's a dimension of a Jew that's not victorious from a place of we survived, but there's a dimension of a Jew that's not even in the struggle. I mean, that's an unbelievable thing to think about, and that they were able to stand with a little bit of Jewish pride, because if you're in the Warsaw Ghetto and everything is happening to you, so then where's your sense of dignity? Like how do you come out from that? And this is what the Esh Kodesh is doing. He's restoring dignity. He's saying no, you're a person, and there's a dimension of you that is untouched by this Mohamma that's happening. There's a dimension of you that's not within this place of like struggling to make it through and then demanding the Yeshua afterwards. There's a dimension of you that's Yisrael. And then with that in mind, listen to the next paragraph, because the next paragraph is a blow away. He says, V'oy remez ha-malach lo. The malach also has another remez here. He's saying something else, but it's oyla b'kinachas. It's all one thing. Ki sarisa im elokim v'im anashim v'atuchal. We know that the word Yisrael means that you struggled with God and with man and you were victorious. Sarisa miloshon sar. This is big. To struggles, ki sarisa im elokim, that you struggled with God, sarisa is from miloshon of to be a lord, to be a master. And in this case, he says, mikoydem sarisa, initially you were a lord, v'achar kach v'tucha. And now, because of that lordship that you have, comes the victory. Gam koydem v'tuchal. Gam k'shahoyu tzarasecha rabbis ma'oid. Gam sarisa lo nafo ruchacha b'kirbacha. Rak gam az ha'isa b'kirbacha sar. You didn't lose yourself. Look what he says. Lo nafo ruchacha b'kirbacha. You did not lose yourself in the middle of that struggle. You remained the master over yourself. You remained the lord over yourself in the middle of this struggle. Which is also a very big thing to say, because we say this. You ever hear these words may have come out of your mouth or you heard other people say them. I feel like I lost myself. You ever have that? I feel like I lost myself. I feel like I lost myself. Could mean a million different things. I feel like I lost myself with this person. And I just was like, we were in such a state of going up against each other and the friction was so deep that I lost myself as a person. I was no longer in control of myself. I didn't know how I was showing up to the relationship anymore. I was not in a place where I could allow another person to show up in a relationship differently. And from that place of losing ourselves, we create a tremendous amount of destruction. We always know when we lost ourselves when we're blaming somebody else. Brené Brown, she says, and I like this very much, she says, blame is discharge of emotion. Holding someone accountable is very different than blame. A person holds accountability when they are a sar over themselves. So, Lamashal, if somebody's treating you inappropriately, a person who has, it's not self-control, it's more than that. It's a true sense of rooted self. In the middle of that machlaikas, they're firmly planted. They're not going anywhere. You can't move these people. when they're being treated inappropriately, they don't get into the emotional game. They're not there to fight. They say a very simple thing. They go, "I'm sorry, that doesn't work for me." And it's like a very clear boundary. It's like, that's not going to work for me. I know somebody that did this actually. They were in a situation where the place that they were working for was playing games with them financially. And so, rather than make a fight and rather than get upset and walk into the boss's office and storm off, this person just said, "It doesn't work for me to work in an institution where I'm not getting paid." So he said this to the person. He's like, "It just doesn't work for me." So there was, "No, we're going to pay you. We just have to worry." He's like, I understand where you're coming from. And I've been down this road before with you guys. And I can't continue to walk down that road. So I just need to know, yes or no. Is it going to happen? Is it not going to happen? It's a person's livelihood. And they said, this person's hemming and hawing. They said, "You know what? I think it's a good idea for us to part company." And he walked away. He walked away from the job. And it was like in the middle of the project, in the middle of the thing, and the people on the other side of, how do you walk out in the middle? Where's your level of responsibility? And he held his own in that situation. He was like, "We're not, like, my level of responsibility to you is dependent on your level of responsibility to me. I'm telling you this is what works for me and this is what doesn't. So I'm not participating in a system that's going to schlep me into that place of losing myself." It wasn't just a brave thing that he did. And I was in there thinking, like, does this person have a tremendous amount of money that they could just leave in the middle of their thing? And they didn't. But they were not in a place where they were going to be thrown into a system where they had to fight for their payment. And this person told me, he's like, "I'm not showing up to work every day resentful. I'm not doing that in my life. I'm not showing up to work resentful." And I was like, I'm like, as a father, as a husband, I'm like, I couldn't do that. I don't think I could do that. I would be the one to participate in the toxic system and blame the toxic system and then say, and feel resentful to my family because I'm doing this because of you and I'm stuck in the sick system because otherwise my myself. There are people that they don't play that game. They're in such a state of self-control that when the person is coming at them inappropriately, they're just like, it doesn't work for me to participate in a relationship like this. There's no fight with that person. And they're not threatening. That's also the key, right? Because the threat is also blame. It's like, if you do this, I'm leaving. That's a threat. This is like a very simple thing. This is what it looks like to be in a relationship with me. There's a mastery over themselves. You see it a lot with teenagers and parents. Nobody knows how to drive a mother crazy like a 16-year-old daughter. A 16-year-old daughter is a master. It's not a manipulation. They've just grown up with this mother. You know what they say in psychology? If it's not one thing, it's your mother. The 16-year-old daughter knows very well her mother's buttons. And she's pushing them from a place of pain, from whatever it is that she's going through. So there are parents that lose themselves to that. There are parents that that need to control. It comes out in such an intense fashion. Because it's born from a lot of fear and our own ability to process our own emotions. But it's like, I'm so not okay with myself, you must be like this. And then there are parents that don't show up like that. They don't show up at all like that. They're not playing that game with their kids. They're just like, "Okay, this is where you are right now. I'm here with you because that's where you need me to be, but I'm still okay. I'm not falling for that trap." There's a mother in particular that I'm thinking of. The first time that I ever spoke with this mother, I'll never forget where I was. I was driving on the Pacific Coast Highway, on the PCH, to San Diego from Los Angeles. Anyone here ever driven that? I give you all a bracha, never leave Eretz Yisrael, but if you're going to, drive the PCH. It's an amazing drive. It's like a 3-hour drive from Los Angeles to San Diego, and it's on the Pacific Coast. So it's very hard to concentrate because it's so beautiful and it's so blue. And you're driving like this, you're like every 2 seconds, you're like, it's amazing. And there's a place to stop on the side of the road. I stopped. I saw they have seals on the beach. You know, like in Farakway, they have like needles and dogs, and like here they have seals, mamish, on the beach. It's beautiful. So I have this, you know, 3 hours that I'm in the car. So I'm in America. So I scheduled phone calls with parents. So there's one kid in yeshiva who was messing around. It had reached the level where I had to speak to the mother. So I'm on the phone, the mother calls, she says to me, I'll say his name was Reuven. And she said, "Berg, how are you? So tell me, is Reuven lying or manipulating? Which one?" So I'm like, "What?" Like, I wasn't prepared. I'm used to the defensive mother, you know. I'm used to the mother that tells me that her son is a tzaddik, and I have to break the news to her that he is a tzaddik, but not in the way you think, right? And it's like a different type of tzidkos, you know. It's a sheva yipol tzaddik v'kam type of tzidkos, you know. And this mother's like, "So he's a big manipulator, but sometimes he manipulates with MS, and sometimes he lies straight out. So, like, which one is he holding by right now?" So I said to her, I said, "I'll be honest with you, I don't think I've ever spoken to a mother who speaks that way. She goes, I'm very aware of who my children are. And we had a very long relationship, very long relationship. All of her children ended up coming to yeshiva. And in the context of knowing her, she's a really, really special person. She was able to have such unbelievable knowledge of her kids because she had a really healthy degree of distance from them. Meaning not, she was like totally invested. She loves them like off the charts. But they didn't define her in any way. She never lost herself. And her kids were pashas, all of them, in their own beautiful way. And they all ended up, Baruch Hashem, amazing. But in their own way, they were all these like wildflower type of children. They were like all over the place. And she was very good with them. She's like, that's okay. You're entitled to go through what you're going through. And it was amazing to watch. It was because so many of us have such a strong need to control life because of the fragility of life. We have such a strong need to do that. And it indicates a lack of that, like he says, Sarisa lo nafal ruchacha bekarbecha. You never lost yourself. I'm trying to think about what it must have been like to tell those Jews in the Warsaw Ghetto that have lost their homes, that are hearing these rumors that these concentration camps are happening, that Jews are being taken off and disappearing by the tens of thousands. And he's saying to them, you have self-mastery right now. That's there for you. Because you're Yisrael, there's a possibility, not only a possibility in the sense like you could do it psychologically, but it's part of your design that you're capable of holding your own in these situations. And again, that's such a tall order, but also such an empowering thought, because again, we're not going through anything like that. But knowing that we are designed to be able to hold our own when the wind is blowing in life and we're feeling like we're just going to be knocked over, again, it's that classic empowerment that we see from the Eish Kodesh again and again. It's really just a really beautiful thing.